This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. More on the Million Movement March and hard times for the Bush administration. Joining us now from our New York bureau, Robert George, editorial writer with the New York Post. Laura Washington of the Chicago Sun-Times, a columnist there. She joins us from our Chicago bureau. And Marilyn George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us. All right, folks, let's talk a little bit more about the Million More Movement March. George Curry, you were there. You actually spoke during the morning proceedings. I'm curious what you felt in terms of the people that you talked to, not just the folks who attended, but leadership and what you garnered they're looking for from this.
Well, I think we have a unique advantage in that we're not just having one major event and that's it. In March, there's going to be a separate convention in Gary, Indiana, and some of the principals involved in putting on this first event will be involved there. So I think that's a unique opportunity to have some follow-up. I also think that it's unfair, really, unreasonable, to expect that you're going to get your full directions from the national movement, national leader. We know there are things that we can do ourselves, that we can either be involved in tutoring, mentoring, after-school programs, you can go down the list, and I don't think you need anybody to really direct you to that. So I think that we focus on the issues, and I think the real work has to be done at the local level, and I think that's the test of it.
That being said, Laura Washington, George Curry, and I spent a good day of and a good deal of Saturday walking around in that crowd and on the stage and talking with people, and people are looking for, perhaps unrealistically, that kind of direction. Do you believe that this could prove, if not meeting expectations, more of a letdown to folks?
I don't think so, because we're such a diverse community, and we know that we have many, many problems and that there are many ways to solve the problems, as you discussed in your previous segment. But, you know, I'm really intrigued by your suggestion about this national report card on black leadership, because I think one of the important messages that Louis Farrakhan has put forward since the beginning is that we need to have accountability and we need to take responsibility. And I think that certainly is true of black leadership. We need to take a look at what kind of a job they're doing and assess their record. And we need to figure out who the leadership is before we can start to put together any kind of an infrastructure for making change. And I think that that change can happen on a big scale and on a small scale. But we do have to acknowledge our flaws and our challenges in the process.
Robert George, this inclusive tent that we heard about, one has to believe also in the best of worlds, it's very hard to try to get a disparate group of people together and focus on one issue. We heard controversy as to whether or not, as Roy Hurst reported for us, whether or not gays were included in the way they had been promised. There were other concerns about what the focus would be. Do you believe that leadership on a national level should pick one or two things, albeit perhaps impossible, but for instance, like poverty and simply focus on that and then say to each other, then have your own pet projects? Would that be, in your opinion, the best way to go?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, you use that the phrase that the environmentalists use, you know, think globally but act locally. I mean, I think it's all well and good that, you know, people are told about they can, you know, they can tutor and mentor and so forth in their own neighborhoods. But, you know, frankly, you know, you don't have to go to the mall in Washington to know that. I mean, that's something that's you know, that is easily understood. I mean, I think there is this kind of a problem, and I think that's frankly, I mean, I was there 10 years ago. I didn't go this year, and I talked to other people who considered going or who had been there 10 years ago and weren't there this year, precisely because they felt that there was this sort of, it was very amorphous as to what the agenda is supposed to be. And if the idea is that, you know, you can in sense empower your communities and take leadership within your local areas, many of them thought, you know, fine, I'm going to do that. I don't need to do that. So unless the leadership is able to really identify, you know, say two or three things, or, you know, create their own, to coin a phrase, a contract for Black America or something like that, I just think that the kind of good feelings that they might have are just going to evaporate very quickly.
I don't think you can just do one thing and just focus on that, because we have such enormous.
I didn't
violence.
Say one. I just said, you know, just a handful.
Hold on,
of
let
things.
Me finish. Hold on, let me finish. Because
well, no, he's clarifying earlier. For you though, George. His suggestion was he wasn't saying that you only do one thing, but you pick one thing. And that was at my suggestion that you pick one thing, right?
Yeah, and I'm responding to that. And my point is, I disagree with that because if you know you focus on poverty, that's important. But a criminal justice system is important. Having affordable housing is important. There are so many problems besetting our community. I mean, I don't think you can do it.
Well, you right. Know, well, I think but my suggestion is, and Laura, pick up. But my suggestion is, you know, I'm not suggesting you only focus on poverty and let these things fall by the wayside. But as a collective, that you pick one issue, you focus on that, and then let the Urban League focus on what they're best at, the NAACP, et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead, Laura.
Well, those organizations are all we're all part of this community. So I don't know that you can really divvy them up that way. I don't know if it's one thing or two things or 10 things, but whatever it is, it has to be inclusive. Ed, as you noted earlier, there is a schism in our community. The Gay and Lesbians organization was promised a speaking role, and apparently, according to them, it was at the last minute denied that. There's a lot of homophobia and there's a lot of discomfort with gays and lesbians in our communities. And if we're going to, as one of the spokespersons for the group told me yesterday, we need every soldier on the field. We can't be in a position to afford to exclude certain folks because of sexual orientation or because of any other reason. And we have to start to address publicly and aggressively those schisms and solve
just,
them.
And just to pick up on that quickly, the group where HIV is spreading strongest, in fact, happens to be black women. And in fact, in New York, you know, Reverend Sharpton has been starting to talk about that and the problem of HIV and particular homophobia in the black community. And I think in that context, it was I guess it was disappointing that if you're going to make this statement and say that morally we're opposed to giving a black gay group the platform, fine, you know, say that, but don't say okay we will, and then when actually somebody's about to go up to the podium, you block them and say oh it's been rescinded. I mean, I think that actually fuels the distrust factor, which is one of the biggest problems within the community in terms of trying to create cooperative ventures.
I agree. There's some confusion there, but one did speak, though. One did speak.
Yeah, I was going to say, let us make sure that we understand that there were homosexual groups that were represented, but not in the numbers that had first been talked about, and there is some controversy as to whether or not they were blocked from speaking.
And also, they had agreed that they wanted to pick the person that would represent them, or give them a group of people to pick, as opposed to one person.
As I understand, according to this group, Keith Boykin, a representative of the National Black Justice Coalition, was asked by Louis Farrakhan to be that speaker, and he was denied a speaking role. So, I mean, we haven't heard from Farrakhan or from the organizers of his organization, but it does give you pause that there's some games that are just being played here, there's some dishonesty here.
Let me bring up an interesting juxtaposition of imagery that happened, unfortunately, over the weekend, and that is, of course, the peaceful representation of African Americans on the Mall on Saturday in Washington, D.C., and then we turn our attention to a riot that broke out in Toledo, Ohio, on Friday, where a neo-Nazi group had received permission from the city to march in a neighborhood. They said that they were protesting whites' rights, and that whites in that neighborhood and in Toledo had been violated by African American gang members. Well, the gang members, it is said by police, I don't know if they're gang members or just mostly young black males who were upset by the virtue of these neo-Nazis, outsiders, many of them, who've been allowed in this neighborhood to march. They were there to protest their coming into this neighborhood. Long story short, riot broke out, and we saw more coverage of this on a national scale than we did the Million More Movement on Saturday. Some will say the neo-Nazis got what they wanted, and that was the ability to say, see, these folks are violent. They don't know how to react. I heard a young black male say, when asked about why he was throwing rocks at police, his suggestion was, hey, this is all a game for me. Life's a game, and then you die. George Curry, when you hear that coming from black men today, and that is representative of more black men than we'd like to think, what do you say?
Well, you know, I think one thing we have to get, and it's not easy to do, is get beyond allowing ourselves to be provoked by white supremacists or any other group, and understand the strength of the First Amendment in the sense that sometimes it's best to let fools go out there and march and ignore them as opposed to confronting them, because I don't think you try to curb speech, even when it's irresponsible. I don't think you try to really curb it, but you combat it, and that could be a learning opportunity for Toledo. I think there are a lot of opportunities that we have, considering the poll results from Katrina, how the race is really to see things totally different, to start building these bridges. And I think you can use that kind of thing. Once you have the spontaneous combustion there, this is predictable.
Yeah, it was one of the most depressing things I've seen in quite some time, because as you said, Ed, the white supremacists I think we're talking about a dozen or less than 20 at least who plan on marching here. They got exactly what they wanted. They got images of black people, not even attacking them, actually attacking the police. And as we know, going back 25 years to Skokie, Illinois, when the ACLU represented the Klan, allowing them to go through a neighborhood too. Hateful groups have a First Amendment right to do these things, and I think it was disappointing, frankly, that even some of the local civil rights leaders down in Toledo might have tried to at least ahead of time try to kind of calm these things, and it's unfortunate what happened.
We should note that the mayor of Toledo is black, and he went into the streets with a minister and tried to squelch some of this, and he too was confronted by these angry young black men who suggested that they should not have allowed these neo-Nazis in this neighborhood. And despite what George suggests, and we all know that they had the right to do so legally, these young black men didn't care about that. And this is where I think we're missing the mark. There are many, many young black men who really see life, as this young man said, as a game. They don't care about much of anything because they believe that they are forgotten, left behind.
Well, I think there's a disconnect between young people, obviously, and government institutions and political leaders, and so you didn't have any communication. That you didn't even, I'm sure that city administration didn't even have the wherewithal or the resources to anticipate that kind of a conflict. But I want to go back to the whole media issue, and I think that relates directly to these young people saying the things they say. See, a lot of what these guys say is stuff that they pick up through the media. They pick up through movies, through films, through music,
and they're
modeling out these negative images, these stereotypes that have been put forward in the media. Those white supremacists knew exactly what they were doing because they know how the media operates. They know that we're much more interested in a conflict model, in violence and conflict, than we are in a peaceful march in Washington. So they played that game, and they knew that they could get young people there and they could position them or have the media aid them in positioning them as quote-unquote gang members, as quote-unquote violent men, because these young guys themselves, again, are picking these messages and these images up from the media, and then they're getting thrown back at them through the media.
And I don't like to be the one who's going to unfairly target entertainment industry and music and so forth. But one of the biggest albums of the last few years, is 50 Cent's "Get Rich or Die Trying." These are some of the messages that some of the young people are absorbing. And I'm not saying that you don't allow that stuff to be there. But the thing is, though, how is an alternative message, an alternative culture, in a sense, fomented within the young people? And I think that's one of the challenges that needs to be addressed.
I agree that that's a problem, but I think it's larger than that. I think it's this feeling, as Laura mentioned, a disconnect in terms of people feeling they don't have no opportunities, there's no way for them to advance, their life pretty much has already been scripted. And I think out of that sense of desperation, you have that kind of behavior, even more so than entertainment, although that's important.
The thing is, you can say that those feelings are there, but it does not justify whether they're gang members or just young people or young knuckleheads or whatever. It can't be justified.
I don't think anyone's here to justify it. But I do think that one of the things that we see is, while it is exacerbated by imagery of television, movies, and the like. I grew up, lived in Detroit. Toledo's 40 minutes away. You can go to Cleveland. You can go to Chicago. There are many young black men in this country, and we don't like to say this out loud often enough, I think, who really feel a disconnect. They have not received it from the music. They believe the music is touting what their life is. And for some of them, it is very real. And until we start to look at that and say to ourselves, as we talked about in terms of the Million More Movement, that we need to do as a community something about this, we're going to have these young men who really do have the feeling that death is just as good as life right now because I have absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but you know, the problem there. I mean, as you said, it is a disconnect. But I mean, if you think about this, you know, 10 years ago, when Minister Farrakhan first did the Million Man March, focusing it specifically on the issue of black men and the concerns of black men, I mean, you had a larger turnout then than you did with the Millions More movement, even though this one was more open to families and women and so forth. So I mean, I think that in itself suggests the greater challenge that is within the community in terms of addressing some of these intractable problems.
Well, I think it's difficult, and George, you and I talked about this on Saturday. Yeah. It's difficult to really juxtapose these 2 days and try to read one thing off of another. I mean, 10 years has gone by. There are a lot of factors that have come into play.
Yes, and the other thing is, you know, we're some of the most reviled people in the world. So to single out and say we're going to focus on black men, and he also had the other factor of Farrakhan being attacked every week. And the more he was attacked, more people were determined to come to Washington, D.C. So I think you had all of those efforts. And yeah, it gets diluted when you talk about across the board, we're going to do this, we're going to have gay rights, we're going to see about this group of ministers, we're going to see, make sure that non-Christians are included. If you just say black men, and the black men wanted to make a statement, especially when Minister Farrakhan was being attacked, that just simply will not be replicated.
But, you know, I think a sense of despair out there, and that, I think that's what was reflected in the lower turnout. Folks said 10 years ago we had a lot of hope. Look at where we are now. And it's hard to keep that hope up.
Yeah. We were going to talk about the rough week that I got to stop you there. Unfortunately, we're right up against the clock. We were going to talk about the rough week that President Bush had last week, but I contend that he'll have just as rough a week this week. So we'll talk about that tomorrow.
There's some agreement there.
All right.
Keep hope
Robert
alive.
George, Laura Washington, George Curry, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You can hear the roundtable again at any time. Simply visit our website, npr.org, and click on to NPR Podcast to learn how to have the roundtable delivered to your computer or MP3 player every day.